you know, they can do, you know, their dream career, they can have the family, they could, you know, have that lifestyle. You know, that's what entrepreneurship allows one, you know, to
but
create that lifestyle.
Allow that. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Entrepreneurs work longer hours than anybody.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that you think entrepreneurship allows you to have it all. Are you kidding me?
This is the Inner Changemaker with Jay Wong, the podcast dedicated to purpose-driven entrepreneurs and multi-passionate individuals. Tune in each week as we bring you an inspiring person and message to help you activate and tap into your inner changemaker. Thanks for spending some time with us today, and let's get started. Hello everyone, 好久不见. That is Chinese for long time no see. And that is actually inspired by last Friday's episode. And for this week, as you've heard from the clip before the intro, this week we have a very interesting guest. Her name is Penelope Trunk, and she has gained a lot of coverage and pretty much built a career off of giving unconventional advice and being bold in her writing and obviously in her interviews as well. And I actually do an intro for her right before we jump into the interview, and you guys will be able to hear that in just a few seconds. I just want to preface this with saying that this podcast is such a wonderful medium because I get to talk to some really, really interesting people, and not everyone actually agrees with the theme of the show, or in this episode, they don't agree with lifestyle design. And Penelope and I really don't agree too much during the interview. And full disclosure, this was definitely not a very well-planned interview on my behalf. I had all these questions, and I pretty much did not ask her any of them. I just went into more of a reactive mode, and you'll see why in just a few seconds. But I wanted to put this episode out because people, you know, I think I want people to know that it's totally okay to have people disagree with you or your brand or what you stand for, right? There's that famous saying that says, if you do not stand for something, you will fall for anything. And so I really, you know, enjoyed this chat, actually, and I enjoyed the challenge that Penelope presented. Nothing she said was factually wrong, but even as I read the transcript over again, I can't help but disagree with some of her viewpoints. So I'd really love to see what the audience thinks. I really would love to hear your thoughts. And I actually wrote up an article, James Altucher style, kind of listing out 12 conventional pieces of advice that I uncovered from the interview. And you can find that at www.theinnerchangemaker.com/Penelope. The Inner Changemaker is all spelt out. Penelope, P-E-N-E-L-O-P-E. And I think some of you will agree with her points that she made, and I think some of you will disagree. But that's really the whole point in having these interviews, these debates. So, you know, for show notes, links, people mentioned in the episode, once again, visit www.theinnerchangemaker.com. It's all spelled out on the front cover on your phone, backslash Penelope, P-E-N-E-L-O-P-E. And you'll be able to get those 12 unconventional pieces of advice there as well. So without further ado, here is the interview with Penelope Trunk. Hello, fellow changemakers. Today we have Penelope Trunk on the show. She is a very well-known serial entrepreneur, author of a few best-selling books, and her blog, PenelopeTrunk.com, gets over 1 million views a month. And Inc. magazine actually named her the world's most influential guidance counselor. And she's pretty famous for her no bullshit advice, her unconventional wisdom about life, about women in entrepreneurship, and people just figuring out, you know, their careers. So Penelope, welcome to the Inner Changemaker.
Thanks.
Thank you for spending some time with us. I'm glad you're here. And you're one of the only people I actually think of when it comes to writing honestly or being, you know, raw, you know, via blogs. And I know Hemingway, you know, is famously quoted saying there's nothing to writing. You know, all you do is sit and bleed at the typewriter. You know, you're someone that I think of when I read that sentence. I mean, did you always have the voice that you have when you do your writing?
No, well, I started writing when I was really little. Before I could write, I would dictate things to my parents for them to write down because I felt it needed to be written, but I couldn't write. And then I've been writing my whole life, so I finally got good, you know, after 30 years of writing or whatever. But I don't think I had that ability to be honest so early on.
For sure, and it's probably, you know, something, you know, in terms of mastery, right? You probably, you know, spent, you know, like you said, 30 years of your time invested in it. You know, when you...
Well, you know, Hemingway can say all you have to do is bleed on the page, but he's a master of brevity, right?
So right.
He's not really bleeding on the page. People who bleed on the page just make a mess, and it feels like, as a reader, you have to clean it up. So... I think the art of being honest is not boring everyone.
Sure. Do you think that's extremely, I mean, is that applicable in today's world? Do you believe that being authentic, being honest, that's on the rise, considering, you know, the social media world that we live in with, you know, filters?
No, no, it's not on the rise at all, because if you live on Facebook, you're pressure to present to everybody a like positive, engaging, successful life is really big, because there's no format on Facebook to say negative things. It doesn't work, you know, like Facebook isn't set up to project your terrible feelings on any given day. So it ends up making it look like everyone else is happy and you're not, and so then you don't want to say anything.
Right. Well, when you do, I mean, a lot of your writing and just looking, you know, on your blog, I mean, I think a lot of your readers really love, you know, how you approach it because you're honest, because you're, you know, blogging about, you know, your personal life, you know, your experience, your viewpoints on, you know, all different aspects. Do you believe that's a big draw for your audience?
Yeah, that I will say whatever I think. Yeah. I think most people relate to what I'm saying, but they think that they're the only ones that are experiencing that, so they don't want to let anyone know.
Interesting. And so, you know, after, you know, going through all the you know, the 30 years of writing, and I know you were a part of, you know, multiple, you know, startups, when do you kind of realize that, you know, writing was, you know, your kind of go-to? It was like this, you know, a safe place for you.
Well, it's not safe because it doesn't make any money. I still don't make any money doing it. I make money doing other stuff. So, like, you know, when I was 4, I knew that I would write. So I would write whether or not I make money. But writing isn't really a way to make money. I don't think we could point to anybody who actually supports a family writing.
Right. And so in writing, I mean, doesn't that help, you know, build that community out? And that probably helps, you know, you do, you know, some coaching, some online courses, and
right.
I'm assuming that that's what, you know, makes the writing worth it in that aspect, but it's not like a direct monetization, you know, thing.
Right. You have to be able to figure out, if you want to be a writer, you have to be able to figure out what can you write that leads to something that you can sell. So there's some types of things that I might like to write, but if there's nothing, I can't make any money from it, so I don't write it.
A lot of the listeners are, you know, people that, you know, maybe have been in the workforce, you know, in under, you know, 5-10 years, people that are, you know, millennials, maybe that are just getting, that have been out of school for a few years. I mean, is there any, you know, is there a framework in terms of how one could kind of develop and find their own voice? Not necessarily when it comes
for
to writing.
Not
necessarily, but just when they find their own voice, like for their life, like how they would be able to find, you know, that greater purpose and their voice alongside of that.
Well, I don't think anybody has a greater purpose in this world. I mean, I think millennials are just obsessed with being remarkable, but most people are not remarkable. And if you look at the lives of people who are remarkable, pretty much nobody would want them. like what you have to give up in order to be remarkable. It generally takes a mad raving lunatic to make that kind of sacrifice. And so I think, especially with millennials who were raised to be remarkable and who live in this like era of social media where people present constant like efforts to look remarkable, people start thinking that it's normal to stand out and be remarkable. But actually, most of those people who are remarkable ruined large parts of their life in order to do it, and most millennials would not want to do that. So there's a pretty big disconnect between the supposed goals that people have and what it takes to reach those goals. For example, one of the common threats among successful venture-funded entrepreneurs is that they're borderline crazy, like literally, you know, like literally need to be medicated, and that's what VCs look for. So, you know, you're probably not going to get funded if you're a basically normal person. If you require basic accoutrements of a normal life, you probably don't even want to be funded, because it's a crazy, messed up life where you don't have the values of mainstream America.
Do you think, I mean, given your experience with, I think you've had 3 or 4 different startups at this point, is that where this would be coming from? Just, you know, kind of being in the trenches and kind of going through that yourself?
Yeah, I think everyone who's funded me has thought I'm generally crazy and a wild card. And you get funded for who you are. You don't get funded for your idea. I mean, your idea has to be fundable, like meet basic requirements, but you get funded for who you are. And if you're if you have a track record for being very mainstream and making very mainstream decisions and needing a typical amount of stability in your life, then you're probably not going to be able to hack it when your company's out of money and you still have to go to work every day and convince everyone to show up for work. And you probably just don't even want to deal with that. Like, why would you? It's terrible, you know? So what comes with being remarkable is that you don't fit in with the world, which means you don't get good wedding pictures. You get stupid, crazy wedding pictures people don't want. And you don't travel and see the world, because traveling is what you do when you have a solid home base and you get bored, so you go see something interesting. And just, there's so many things that to me scream you are too mainstream to actually truly want to have a remarkable life. And I wish that, like, everyone hadn't been raised to be told they need to do something remarkable, because then the pressure is just absolutely crazy, especially for women who, when they're 28, they have to start thinking of having kids. And if they haven't done anything remarkable by then, they're really, really, really disappointed. And the truth is, none of the guys are going to do anything remarkable either, but they don't have that biological clock where they have to admit it really early on. And I don't know, I just think finding your own voice, I mean, what is that? Everybody has just really basic wants for their world. They want to love and be loved and have a family and have security and have interestingness, right? Everybody wants that.
Yeah.
There's nobody who doesn't want that. So that's a lot of stuff to want, and there are not very many avenues for getting it. So that doesn't include being 30 and putting a whole company on your credit card and ruining your credit and your spouse's credit and your spouse divorcing you and you living in a apartment with 5 other guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I just think...
So it's almost like you're saying that the, you know, society doesn't give, you know, almost like respect or kudos for people that want a normal life, but the thing is, everyone by default, will have more or less of a normal life.
Well, why do you think that society doesn't give kudos for a normal life? That just doesn't make any sense to me, because by the time you're 40, everybody has a spouse and kids, right? And almost nobody is a millionaire, because that's the way the world is. And almost nobody is working 80-hour weeks, because 40-year-olds don't work 80-hour weeks.
Sure.
So you can, like, have the fantasy in your 20s that you're going to be remarkable by 30, but you have to be very, very weird and eccentric for that to happen. So that's not likely for most people. Mm-hmm. And then between 30 and 40, you have to make some kind of money. You can't get entry-level jobs because nobody wants a 30-year-old in an entry-level job. So tons of things are closed off to you. So I think society has tons of respect for making mainstream decisions, because you can't really function as a 40-year-old outside the mainstream. Like, think of any 40-year-old you know that you respect. Are they penniless? Sure. Are they taking crazy risks that preclude having a family? No. So everybody's just marching to the same mainstream result.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are crazy, so they do really ludicrous, dangerous things on that way. But the idea that society doesn't respect mainstream decisions is just tragic, really, because 99% of society is mainstream.
Sure.
So then the self-hatred going on is incredible, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well,
do you think I'm wrong? Do you disagree with this?
No. I find it, the reason, you know, I wanted you on the show, because I find it, so much of what you wrote, really fascinating, because, you know, I think the narrative, you know, in the, you know, I'm a young 20, you know, 25 years old, just going at it. You know, I have the ability, for example, you know, to work, you know, 10 hours if I wanted to, right? Because I don't have, or 10 to 12 hours a day, whatever. But I just feel that the narrative, as, you know, and I know a lot of younger entrepreneurs under 30, that, you know, I feel like the narrative coming out of school right now is that everyone needs to have, you know, some venture-backed startup. They want to be this number one. They want to have that rock star lifestyle. And, you know, being like an actual entrepreneur, that's, you know, almost like literally the complete opposite of that perception. And coming from business school, I don't think it necessarily helps, you know, the mindset as much, because you just read all these crazy articles on the web, and I just feel that, you know, that's what the narrative is in the world, that you have to, you know, go out on your own and do this entrepreneurship thing. But you know, maybe a lot of people are giving up, you know, opportunities to be part, you know, maybe they're a great number two or number three of, you know, a startup. And so, you know, I just find, you know, this topic really, really, you know, fascinating. And no, I don't necessarily disagree with you. What I was thinking, though, was, you know, Steve Jobs at one point said that, you know, you have to pick something that you're passionate about, because logically speaking, you know, you're doing all these crazy hours, you're doing all these things. If you're not passionate about it, obviously you're going to give up.
Well, hold on. Let's look at Steve Jobs. While he was doing all the things he was passionate about, he had a kid that he couldn't support.
Right.
Right? He had a kid and he didn't go get a job to support that kid. He thought his passions were more important.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, you know, way more than 50% of American males could not do that. It's so morally despicable. 50% of American males, and way higher of females, if they were in that position, they would feel responsible for the child. Steve Jobs is all about what's interesting to him, what's great for him, does he want to be a Zen Buddhist, blah, blah, blah. But that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. It's despicable. It's generally despicable moral values that drive remarkable people. They're outside of the ethical mainstream.
Right.
For example, Bill Gates. Bill Gates spent tons of time selling something that absolutely did not exist. He had no idea how he built it. He was telling people it was done. He was telling people it was possible. He had not done it. There is only a very small percentage of people who can sell something that doesn't exist. I happen to be one of them. I'm amazing at selling something that it really, really doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like almost psychotic, right? What percentage of the world can go and get $100,000 from someone telling them that they have in their house something they can deliver that doesn't exist? It's borderline sociopath. These are the things that you have to do in order to be remarkable. And people just don't look at it. Look at Martha Stewart. Oh, my God. I coach so many women who tell me they want to be the next Martha Stewart. I could just ring real names off to you of women who have startups that want to be the next Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart's daughter didn't talk to her for 15 years because she was such a terrible mother, which is exactly what you have to do. If you want to have a kid and have a brand like Martha Stewart, you have to give up being a parent to your children. But all the women who are like, I want to be the next Martha Stewart, don't take that into account.
Sure.
As if, like, somehow you don't have to do the sacrifice that Martha Stewart or Steve Jobs or Bill Gates did. And it just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. So being remarkable, you know, requires that level of sacrifice.
Well, yeah, you'd have to be outside of the mainstream. So you ask yourself, how do you actually function outside of the mainstream? Most people don't. Most people are very, very uncomfortable outside of the mainstream. It's not a pleasant place to be.
Right. And I think you're saying that there's nothing wrong with being, you know, there's nothing wrong with being normal, but people feel the need that they have to be remarkable, especially people in the general generation Y that we grew up and our parents, you know, told us, you know, you could be anything in the world.
Well, also, baby boomers are very, very competitive, much more competitive than millennials. And so the baby boomer parents want their kids to be remarkable.
Right, right, right. That influence from their parents.
Yeah. The parents want to see that. The parents put everything into their kids so that they would be remarkable. But I don't think very many people are comfortable living outside the mainstream. On top of that, parents don't want their kids to be outside of the mainstream. Parents forget that remarkable requires you to be different. It's like Einstein. Who, really? You want a kid like Einstein? No. He got thrown out of school. He's gross. He couldn't hold a marriage together. It's like people forget one of the biggest risk factors in divorce is being an entrepreneur.
Right.
Like, do you want your marriage to stay together? Not only shouldn't you be an entrepreneur, you shouldn't marry one. This whole, like, in all the personal development, like, you know what? I'm on a tirade now. All the personal development stuff assumes that you have one guiding value, one thing that's extremely important to you. And so people who are great at personal development, like Dave Allen, Ramit Sethi, Tim Ferriss, all those people, they do not take care of kids. They do not take care of a serious relationship. They don't take care of parents. They don't have anything that they're responsible for except generating personal development tidbits for people who don't have anything else in their life. Or like Chris Gillibo, who like travels all around the world and does his location independent stuff. Well, how can you be in a relationship if you have his wife? And he publishes all these personal development books for his wife, but no one wants to be these people. They're not in relationships. These are grown men who are not involved in their children's lives and or they don't have serious relationships. They don't even have a place they call home. I mean, Tim lives in four houses. Ramit lives on two coasts. But these are not lives anybody wants. These are completely exceptional lives. So when you talk about personal development, I think the biggest personal development millennials need is some honesty, some genuine honesty from somebody who genuinely leads a life that you would like to lead. Don't look at the person's achievements and say, you would like their achievements. Look at what that person does on a daily basis and say, I want their day-to-day life.
Sure. Are you suggesting that, I mean, I know a big thing in personal development, and I've probably said it at some point in this podcast, is that people could have it all. You know, they can do, you know, their dream career, they can have the family, they could, you know, have that lifestyle. You know, that's what entrepreneurship allows one, you know, to
but
create that lifestyle.
Allow that. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurs work longer hours than anybody.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that you think entrepreneurship allows you to have it all? Are you kidding me? The only way to have it all is to have tons of nannies, right?
Sure.
You can't have kids and a big job without nannies. You can't afford nannies if you aren't a millionaire, and you need a safe place to get to being a millionaire by the time you're in your early 30s to have kids, right?
Yeah.
There's a clock ticking. So the best way to do that is to climb a corporate ladder. It's way, way, way more assured than if you start climbing when you're 20, you'll be fine when you're 32, as long as you can keep going up. Now, the issue with can you keep going up is that everybody above middle management is two personality types, but there are 16 in the world. So you can just look at people and know who's going to keep going up and who isn't. It's not a mystery.
But are you? I'm sorry. Are you referring to the Myers-Briggs there?
Yeah.
For the 16 personalities? Okay.
So there's 16 personality types. Only 2% of the whole world is an ENTJ, and they're 100% of Fortune 500 CEOs. So the Fortune 500 and in the top of corporate America use very, very strongly the two personality types. So if you're a personality type that doesn't climb the corporate ladder, if you're and isn't good at entrepreneurship, just forget it. Like, you're not, this is so dumb. I have so little patience for entrepreneurship as a path to have it all. I don't even think you can tell me somebody. There was an article in the New York Times about women who are entrepreneurs who bring their kids to work. All those women had husbands who funded their company.
Right.
And funded the daycare. So in order to be an entrepreneur and have kids, you need round-the-clock daycare because entrepreneurs, round-the-clock childcare because entrepreneurs have to travel. So, If you can either have a spouse that does nothing except picks up the family slack for you, and then, I mean, if that's your definition of having it all, then I guess you do, but you don't see your kids, or you can have, I mean, I don't, why do you think you can have it all with entrepreneurship? This is like baffling and astounding to me.
So I think, you know, what I meant is that entrepreneurship, I mean, you can create a lifestyle business. And if the end goal is to create a lifestyle business, I mean, I definitely believe.
What is that? Who has that? Can you tell me an example of someone who has that?
Jason Gaynard, for example, from Mastermind Talks.
Does he have kids?
He has one daughter. I believe she's like three or four.
Okay, well, he can't support two kids that are teenagers with that fight.
Sure, and absolutely, I do agree with you.
So that's not a lifestyle business, because it can't support the lifestyle that he wants.
I mean, it's like on the front end of entrepreneurship, it's, you know, the first like few years is just, you know, absolute hell. But if your end goal at some point is to, you know, create that lifestyle business, I do believe that you could build a certain business up and have things automated.
You totally can do that. You cannot support two kids on it. I don't know anyone who does.
Sure. You're saying income-wise.
Yeah, it's just incremental income.
Sure.
But if you're going to have to go to work anyway to get life insurance or to get health insurance,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to have you have two kids, it's way cheaper to have the second spouse at home than pay for after-school care for to like grade school kids.
Yeah.
So, I mean, unless that person's making tons of money. So then you may as well just get rid of the lifestyle business, because if you go to work every day so that you can get insurance and then come home and do the lifestyle business, all that lifestyle business does is take away from your family time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lifestyle. It's like an incremental revenue business that you can walk around and be like, oh yeah, I have a business.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, what's appealing to almost everybody that I've talked to, you know, in terms of the show, it's that people want to have a business that works for them. They don't want to actually spend, you know, no one actually, I don't think, wants to spend, you know, 80 hours continuously just working on a project that gives them, you know, incremental results.
I get it. But what I'm saying is, who has a business that supports a family?
Mm-hmm.
Who has one of those lifestyle businesses where it's automated that supports a family? I don't know anyone. And I talk to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very different to support a 3-year-old than a 13-year-old. A 3-year-old doesn't ask for an iPad. A 3-year-old doesn't need to go to camp.
Mm-hmm.
A 3-year-old doesn't need to get tutoring. A 3-year-old doesn't want jeans that the other kid has.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not, it's not sustainable. It's kind of like a Ponzi scheme, right? Like somebody learns to automate one part of a business and then they sell it to other people. Like you too can automate your business, but then they're selling the act, they're selling teaching you how to do it. It's just like
sure.
a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. If you can't pick out somebody who is actually doing what you imagine yourself to be doing in the end, then it's probably not possible.
Mm-hmm. And I know that's pretty, you know, in terms of like career advice, you are, you know, a career specialist after all. Do people just, I mean, is it finding someone, seeing what their lifestyle is, and, you know, figuring out, you know, if you have those skills to essentially mimic that to some extent and have that lifestyle for yourself?
Well, people aren't very honest about what their life is, right? Like if you go to a law firm and ask lawyers if they have a good life, very few of them will be like, my life is shit.
Yeah.
But the American Bar Association tells you that 88% of lawyers would like to not be lawyers. So you're already at a disadvantage because you don't have good information. So for example, it's not public knowledge that Sheryl Sandberg has round-the-clock nannies for each kid, and the kids go to her sister's house for dinner every night. So you could tell yourself, oh, I think I could do Sheryl Sandberg's life, but you don't actually get to see it because Sheryl won't talk about it, right?
Right.
Or like that guy that you brought up who has his lifestyle business. You don't realize that if you don't have kids, you don't know that the ability to support a 3-year-old is like whatever. They're like free. A 3-year-old is pretty much free.
Okay.
And it's not, so you can't tell if somebody can support a family until their kids are old enough to generate their own wants and needs. And so what you really need to do, I think, is just go get a goddamn job. Everybody should just go get a job. Entrepreneurs are not happy. You cannot raise a family with a non-stable income. It's very, very hard. It's very unlikely that both spouses will be working by the time your kids are 12. I don't know any family that truly wants both spouses working when the kids are 12. They would like it that one person is not working. You cannot have one person working, not working, if you have a lifestyle business. A lifestyle business does not support 4 people in the middle class. You have to actually work to support 4 people in the middle class. You have to show up somewhere and do stuff that people don't like to do so you get paid enough money. And it's like this idea that we're all special and we all deserve some special thing because we're all smart, it kind of also presupposes everyone else is a total idiot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, all those stupid people who go to work every day, I don't buy it. I think, like, in general, I don't think anyone is, like, so much smarter than everyone else. And I think the people who are so much smarter than everyone else generally have Asperger's. They generally suck at social skills, and they're at a deficit anyway. And if you don't have Asperger's, your brain is probably within the norm. Mm-hmm. You probably have generally good social skills. If you are in the middle class or above, you have a generally higher IQ, whatever. You're not that special. Just go get a job. It's a lot of pressure to be told that you're more special than everyone else, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of pressure.
For sure, for sure. Well, I really, you know, appreciate the, you know, the viewpoint of, you know, people going to get a job. And I don't actually think that a lot of people advocate that enough. But, you know, like I said, you're a career specialist. So after all, you do help people, you know, transition and get into their careers. So last question before you leave, we're trying to find, or at least I'm trying to get a better definition of the word change maker. When you hear the word change maker, what's, you know, the definition that comes to your mind?
Bullshit aspirationalism. Like, what really matters at the end of your life? What matters? Does it matter that you, that somebody thinks you instigate change? I don't think so. I think it matters if you can create stable, fulfilling relationships and like have an interesting life.
Well,
and I think most people don't require change to have an interesting life.
Okay. Well, you know,
do you need that? Do you need to create change to have an interesting life? Like, was this podcast interesting to you?
Yeah. Well, the podcast has been absolutely an amazing kind of medium, you know, to be able to communicate with, you know, entrepreneurs, people like yourself. But I think, you know, with Changemaker, it's not necessarily like, you know, you don't need to go out and change the world. But I do believe that change is one of the most constant things in people's lives. You know, it's absolutely...
Right, so you don't need to make it. It just happens to you.
Sure. And you know, my whole argument, you know, is saying that, you know, you don't need to go change the world, but you could change yourself to be a better person, a better spouse, a better, you know, brother, sister. And, you know, you're changing those people around you. You're changing their world, their, you know, their mini world. And so, you know, whether, you know, you do want to go impact and save the world, I mean, that's, I think that's really great. But on a more applicable scale for everyone listening, I do believe that there is value in, you know, learning how to be a better person, a better communicator, or, you know, just, you know, doing something like Myers-Briggs and understanding, you know, how to, you know, leverage your personality type, right? So, you know, that's, I appreciate, you know, the honesty behind the answer. But yeah, that's all I meant, you know, by change maker.
Well, I think that that's just another way that it puts pressure on people. Like, it's actually really hard to graduate with debt and get a job that can pay off debt from school, right? It's hard to just do that. So somebody who, like, doesn't have debt and can, like, obsess about their, I don't know, their, like, how their, what time management software they're using, like,
sure.
Is one person doing something better in the world than the other? Are the aspirations better? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think what everybody wants is to cope with the change and to create stability. People want stability in a world of change.
I like
something
that,
to think
actually.
About.
Yeah, no, definitely some food for thought for myself and the audience. If people, you know, wanted to, I mean, obviously, you know, they can find you on the blog, PenelopeTrunk.com. Where else could they learn about your online courses and read more about, you know, your articles and your blogs?
They can just go there, PenelopeTrunk.com.
Hey guys, I'm just going to jump in here really quick and wanted to, I mean, that was, you know, the interview, the full interview with Penelope Trunk. So what did you guys think? Did you guys agree with anything that she said? Did you agree with her points? Do you still believe maybe entrepreneurship is something for you? Which part of the interview resonated with you? I'm really curious to know. You could fill out or you can go comment in the section at www.theinterchangemaker.com/Penelope. I'm also going to be posting this probably on LinkedIn, so you can comment on there as well, wherever you really hear this. Really, really would love to know where you guys stand on that. But I really hope you enjoyed the interview. And for the 12 unconventional pieces of advice, once again, you can just go to my website, www.theinterchangemaker.com. Okay, so until later this week on Friday, which I talk about probably some of the unconventional lessons, until then, live with passion, live your dream, and live it now.